You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Wade the rebound. He falls down and trips over Hawkins. And Jackson steals the rebound back from Arquette. To Diener, to Wade. Driving jam! A ridiculous jam! He's fouled by Estill. And Wade, up in Estill's face, screams, "Look at me! You can't stop me today!"
Romo, low snap, bobbled. He picks it up, has time, throws for the end zone. Caught by Witten. Touchdown! Touchdown! Jason Witten. The Cowboys, an extra point away from taking the lead with 7 seconds to go in Dallas. Tony Romo ripping victory out of the jaws of defeat.
And the Blazers have 12 seconds to shoot. Stolen by LeBron. LeBron on a breakaway. And the first basket of his Laker career is a tomahawk dunk that brings the crowd to its feet.
I know you're listening to this going, wait a second, I want to listen to Move the Sticks, talking some football. Trust me on this. You're going to enjoy this episode. And Buck, we always talk about the importance of multi-sport athletes and how it benefits players in the NFL. And we're going to devote this entire episode to talking to some unique people who can connect the dots between football and the sport of basketball.
DJ, we talked at length about the crossover appeal, a guy that has played basketball moving over to the gridiron, and we're talking to some of the best people that you can find to talk about this. Tom Crean, the University of Georgia head basketball coach, also coached Dwayne Wade at Marquette. He's going to talk. Steven Berizowitz, the head coach for Tony Romo. He's going to talk about Tony Romo's growth and development as a basketball player. Mel Tucker from Colorado weighs in. Jim Meyer, LeBron James head football coach. That's right, football at St. Vincent St. Mary High School. Matt Rule from Baylor weighs in. And so a lot of great guys, a lot of the best coaches in both sports are going to talk about the benefits of the hardwood gridiron crossover.
Look, great players are great players, and in the evaluation process, you can learn from different sports and different evaluations. And these are some fascinating conversations. We've talked for a long time about quarterbacks, their vision, how that translates from the basketball court to the football field. Talk about some great basketball players that have a football background that's given them some toughness and some other things that have benefited them on the hardwood. So with the launch of the NBA season, we thought this would be a good time to try and really take a deep dive into this topic of multi-sport athletes and connect some dots. And that's what we're going to do today. Our first interview, Bucky mentioned it, Tom Crean, the head coach at the University of Georgia, has coached some great basketball players. Dwayne Wade, going to be a Hall of Famer. Victor Oladipo, we coached at Indiana, a fantastic player. And Coach Crean has an interesting perspective when it comes to the football world because his two brother-in-laws, John Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh, obviously pretty deep in that world. So here's our conversation with Tom Crean. Well, Coach, first of all, thank you so much for taking some time with us today. I guess my first question for you, you know, as a coach, and you're getting ready to embark on a new season as you are there at the University of Georgia, is there a theme? Do you put a theme on each season, or is there a message you try and hone in on each particular season?
Well, I think it changes during the season, but the one that we have really tried to attack from the spring on throughout the summer and into now is commit to toughness. Yeah, I think you can do a lot with visual management and putting signs up and T-shirts. And I think that stuff's great. But I think you got to figure out how you're going to live it. And for us, we had to be able to finish better. We had to be able to get tougher at the end of something. And that was the bottom line, whether it was the beginning of the workout, the beginning of the strength workout, whether it was the middle. But certainly what we did at the end and then going above and beyond it at the end and having them understand that the finish part is so important, and you can never put a defining characteristic on what finishing is. You just know you better have it when it comes, and that you can answer the bell.
You know, Coach, it's interesting that you brought up the toughness thing, because sometimes you wonder when you're evaluating athletes, would you rather have the toughness or the talent? If all things are considered, would you rather have a tough guy or a super talented guy?
Well, to me, I don't know where I got this, but I got it a long time ago at Marquette. Toughness is a talent. And I think the more that you have guys, talented guys that understand the level of mental and physical toughness that they've got to have, especially the mental part when they get fatigued, and it's getting harder and harder. So in answer to your question, there's got to be a level of talent. And when we recruit, we're looking at upsides more than we're looking at the actual product. I mean, you got to be able to project. You got to project athletic upside, project the character and work ethic upside, project the intelligence upside. Well, once you get into it, now you've got to carry that out. And no matter where their upsides are, if you're not getting a level of toughness to go through with that, then you're not going to be where you've got to be. But people don't come into this trying to fail. They may not be mature enough. They may not be strong enough. They may not be mentally composed enough to go through it. But you have a job as a coach to get them to believe how important that is. And eventually they believe in themselves to a higher level, and toughness becomes a part of who they are for the most part.
Coach, you say that word toughness, and we've talked about it a bunch in the football evaluation. We were looking at wide receivers the other day, and we were ticking down the list from top 10 guys in receiving right now at this point in time in the season. And the one trait that we could say they all have in common, because there's different sizes, speeds, even quickness, they all were tough, man. They were all tough, sure. Physical, contested catches, you name it. I think that translates from any sport that we're talking about. One of the guys you had, as tough as anybody, he's got a Hall of Fame player in Dwayne Wade. I'm just curious, what did you see from him as a young player, and did you identify that toughness gene in him right away?
Well, speaking of receivers, he would have been, by his junior year at Marquette, he would have been a pretty good receiver, because he not only had toughness and he had the body, but he had such good separation ability. And you know as well as I do, that ability to separate from the defensive backs as a receiver, you know, whether it's with your hands, your feet, your eyes, you know, the double moves, whatever it is, that's the same in basketball, trying to beat a guy. And you got to win your one-on-one battles. But again, the game of basketball is not about one-on-one. It's about attacking the help. And that's where Dwayne was so good. And when he got fundamentally sound, when he really started to grow in his fundamentals in college, the number one strength that he has, and that I think was probably the biggest thing that carried him to such great success, outside of his humility, outside of his talent, outside of his scoring ability, was his vision. I mean, he could really, really see. He could see, you talk about quarterbacks seeing the second and third level defensively. He could see the second and third level of help as an offensive player with the ball, which meant he could either score it or he could find numerous people to pass it to. So there's so many similarities between the sports, especially football and basketball. And Dwayne could have played a lot of different positions on the football field, just like he did for us on the basketball court.
Coach, it's interesting that you brought up that crossover dynamic. We've interviewed football coaches who say they look for football players who play basketball. And for quarterbacks in particular, they want guys who have been point guards. So in thinking about the point guard position for you, what are the core traits that you look for in a point guard? You talked about vision, but what are some of the other attributes that you look for in the guy that is directing the show for your teams?
Separation ability and really being able to make decisions in real time. And it doesn't matter if the person is a total A, B to C person, or if they're A, C, B or B, C, A with how they see the game, with how they see the openings. They've got to be able to see them, right? They've got to be able to make those decisions in real time. Sometimes your point guard, if he can really see the floor, you want him to be your inbounder because it doesn't have to just be A, B, C for him. He can see different things. So that ability, I think for us, the shooting ability is huge. The ability to get to the rim, even if they can't finish at the rim, maybe because of their size, can they draw the defenders in and then make that next pass? And again, that's where vision comes in. But I think ultimately they've got it. Your point guard cannot have bad days, which mean they cannot be moody. They cannot have mood swings on the court. They may get dejected once in a while. They may get disappointed once in a while. They may get angry once in a while. But you can't have a moody point guard because that leadership has got to be intact constantly. And we're trying to make sure that we understand that. And they've got to be courageous. So when you put together the right attitude and you put together the right courage, you've got a chance to be an outstanding point guard because you've got to lead in really difficult times inside of a game.
Coach, you talk about the ability to separate, talk about vision, the explosiveness, toughness. I think another one of your players in Victor Oladipo, who you had a chance to help mold. What was it about him that made him somebody that seemed like every year with you he got better, and then you look at what he's done in the NBA, he just seems to be adding to his game each and every year.
He's got a work ethic that you can't even describe. And it's amazing. I'll get asked in recruiting or different people ask, okay, who were your hardest workers? And the majority of the hardest workers all ended up in the NBA. A few that weren't the hardest workers ended up in the NBA, but more that weren't the hardest workers didn't end up in the NBA. And Victor was in an unbelievable place with his desire to get better and compete. He didn't come in entitled. He was ranked 138th in the country. We were his only scholarship offer at Indiana. He played on a team that I think had 10 or 11 Division I players at DeMatha. They had at least four guys that I think are still in the NBA that he played with. So he didn't come up that way. He was raised right in his family. He was raised right in the game of basketball. But he had the work ethic. He had a humility. He had a spirit. And eventually that when the skills started to come, then the toughness started to come. He always had the energy. But once the skills came, and the biggest thing to me, what I remember so much about in college was how the game slowed down for him like it does most great players. But he went from shooting 14% in Big Ten play as a sophomore to 47% in Big Ten play as a junior. And really, he worked in practice, but his level of work outside of practice, 365 days a year, almost to the day, was unbelievable. The 365 days a year is not hyperbole. That is as solid as can be. And he's just turned himself into be one of the greats in the NBA.
You know, Coach, you strike me as a guy that looks at – you can learn lessons from every sport. Obviously, sure. You're married into the Harbaugh family with Jim and John. You married their sister. What has that relationship been like for you to be able to watch them in their respective careers, and what things have you been able to pick from them that you've been able to implement in your own coaching style?
Well, there's been a ton. And Joni is – Joni could have been a coach in her own right. I mean, she's so good at those things just because she gets so much from her mom, Jackie. And obviously growing up with their father, Jack, with my father-in-law, and the last game he ever coached, he won a national championship at Western Kentucky when it was 1AA football back in 2002. So many lessons all the way across the board. I think what happens is there is a they're different, but they're the same in the sense – you know, Jim wears his competitiveness outward a little bit more sometimes than John does. And the bottom line is they're both unbelievably competitive, but they both have tremendous empathy for people. And I don't think you could be successful in this business like they have been at the level they've been and not have that level of empathy. I think a lot of people see it in John. I don't think Jim gets nearly enough credit for it. But also the thing they have that I take so much from them is their resilience. Like what Jim has done. Okay, and I know they've got to go to Illinois this week and then Penn State the following week, but what he has done with that team in the last 2 weeks since that Wisconsin game, and I haven't been there, But in just talking to my father-in-law, sharing text messages, things like that, Jim absolutely is a force of spirit with his team. And he makes you believe a lot of times that you are better than what you really are. And I think John has the same thing. They can bring the best out of you. And I think sometimes for all of us, it's like when you're in a game, you're not teaching your players new things in a game. You're really not as coaching them as much as you're reminding them. And I think now in our place where we've been together for so long as a family, there's a lot of reminders, because no matter how high you go up this chain, you know, business, of coaching, whatever you got in your profession, you got to be reminded from time to time what you're capable of. And I think everybody in this family does a great job of that.
Coach, this is outstanding. I've got a page full of notes here. Last question, and then I'll let you run.
I was honored to be asked.
This is so great. We love this stuff. Last question from me. We talking about John and Jim. One of the things that stood out to me the last couple years is their ability to evolve and embrace kind of some new ideas. We've seen it with Lamar Jackson's selection, how they've built this whole new offense around him. You look at Jim, what he's done, bringing in some new voices for them offensively, making some changes. As a coach, you personally, how do you balance kind of your core beliefs and core philosophies, which you don't want to negotiate, versus being open to change and trying to do things a little bit different, a little bit better?
I think it's lifelong learning. And I don't think it's something that you just talk about. I mean, I think you're always looking for ways to get better. And I think it's part of that growth mindset, right? The old Carol Dweck from Stanford mindset book. Jim and John both have tremendous growth mindsets. Jim doesn't show his as much in an outward way sometimes as John does, but they're both highly, highly intelligent guys that don't think they have all the answers. They have conviction. They have personality. They have a strength, but they have a mindset that they're willing to change, they're looking to change, they're looking to add, but they're very convinced on what it takes to win. And when you're convinced on what it takes to win, you know that there's a lot of different ways to win a game. So you've got to be convicted in what your core is, and I like to think that I'm the same way. But when you get into that game, or you get into the season, or you've got a different type of team, you can't just plug guys into your system all the time. A lot of times you've got to build your system around the players that you have. And I think they do a really good job of that. But neither one of them, and I hope I could say the same thing, we never get away from what the bottom line is of how you win. There's got to be respect for your teammates. There's got to be respect and a love of the game. There's got to be a passion for what you're doing. There's got to be a level of toughness, but you have to play to a level of efficiency. And I think that's what young players, and I think they deal with it in the NFL and in college football too, and I know we deal with this all the time. The level of efficiency that you have to have is the most important thing that a player can have. Because if you're efficient, all right, it's not just about what you're doing. You're making your teammates better. You know, you're helping them be efficient. You're helping them be a better teammate. It's not about the volume shooting. It's not about stringing together how great you play. It's how many ways can you impact your team? And I love the way those guys do that. And that's something that we think about in every decision that we make here. What's going to give us an edge? What's going to impact the team? Okay, and how can we be better today by doing it if it's going to make sense for us?
You know, Coach, I got to let you go because I got this one question I want to ask. I know you guys open up November 5th versus Western Carolina. In an ideal world, if I'm a newcomer watching Georgia basketball, what should I see when I see the Bulldogs take the floor?
Well, we've got 10 new guys in this team, so that's a question that's going to be an ongoing answer as the season goes on. But I would think you'd see a group of guys who are going to be active defensively and make up for their mistakes, that really get their hands up, they're active, will dive on the floor for loose balls, but will cut and move without the basketball offensively. I think early on with this season, we spent so much time trying to work on our movement without the ball, delivering the ball on time, on target, you know, finding ways to get layups, that what happens with young players is they revert back and they think they're going to do it themselves. The quicker that we can break that and get out of that bad habit, the better we're going to be. So hopefully by November 5th, you start to see that this team really utilizes the space on the floor. They may not be as efficient as they're going to be, but you can see it coming. And they put a tremendous amount of activity on the defensive end and on the rebounding end.
Coach, that is awesome. We've got page full of notes here. I feel like we learned a lot today. Hopefully our listeners did as well. We'll be rooting for the Bulldogs this Thanks. Basketball season. We got the football program rolling. Now we're going to get the basketball program rolling, and Athens is the place to be, man.
I know we look across the street, and I mean, the blueprint for success at the highest of levels, that running that like an organization that is totally built on respect for one another and the way that they go about it. I mean, it's right there. I mean, it's literally right across the street. And what's great for me, and I had this summit in Indiana, but I've got it a lot more now, is when my NFL friends come in and they come in and watch practice or watch games, I get a chance to visit with them and steal ideas too. And so that's what's fun. And I just love watching what Kirby's doing with that football program, because it is high, high level.
I love it, Coach. Hey, we know you're busy. This is your time of year. But again, cannot thank you enough. Appreciate you spending time with us today.
No, I don't get to talk football enough, so this is awesome. I appreciate it very much.
It's been great, Coach. Thanks
so much.
You
got a future as a football analyst.
For sure.
Thank you, Coach.
No doubt.
Thank you.
Well, Buck, it was great to catch up with Coach Crean, and you can definitely feel his passion. I think they're going to get that thing turned around there at the University of Georgia. But I thought it was fascinating just hearing, you know, what makes great players great. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you play tennis, you know, basketball, football, baseball, it doesn't matter. You can find those characteristics that those great players have in common.
Yeah, I think the big thing that I took away from his interview was not only commit to toughness and how toughness is essential in the players that he wants as a part of his program, but it was the developmental aspect. And he talked about with Victor Oladipo, 365, 24/7, all year round, every waking hour of the day, he was focused on improving his game. I think that translates in any sport, football, basketball, baseball, whatever it is. If you commit to really developing your game, improving your game, if you put the time in and you have the skills and the requisite toughness, you can be a high-level player. I think Tom Crean expressing that, to me, that was the biggest takeaway when it came to the basketball thing. I sense that he wants basketball players to have a bit of a football mentality.
And I enjoyed just the discussion on, you know, the comparison of point guards and quarterbacks. I thought he offered some tremendous insight there and what they look for at the point guard position, a lot of the same things we look for at the quarterback position, which leads us into our next conversation, because Tony Romo has had a phenomenal career, and now he's emerged as really the top broadcaster in the NFL with what he does calling games for CBS. But an outstanding player, and everybody knows, most people know, I should say, his background as a basketball player, phenomenal high school basketball player. So to learn more about Romo and his basketball career and the connection between what you see on the hardwood and what you see on the football field, we reached out and found his high school basketball coach, Coach Steven Berezowitz, and here's our conversation. Well, Coach, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time for us today. You know, I guess my first question for you, when was the first time you saw Tony Romo on the basketball court?
Yeah, I was a young hire here in town, hired to, just assuming I was going to maybe coach a little freshman or junior varsity, and an opening came up that they needed a head coach. So I did have some experience coming out of college, helped out a little bit, so I was offered a position, and the very first time I saw him play, he was a little bit, you know, Tony was an unskilled kid at that age, at 16, but you could tell that he just was a little bit different than the other kids.
You know, you talk about him being an unskilled player at that time, but he was obviously he had to be a tremendous athlete. How hard did he work on his basketball skills while also being a big-time quarterback?
Well, I think when you look at somebody like him, he was just a – Tony, he was a gym rat. He just liked to play. I wouldn't say he would – you know, in this day and age, I think it's hard to find those kids that just want to play, and that's what he did. He just played everything. In his play made – that's where his skill came from. So just would find games, would go and compete on the golf course with his dad, and that's where the skill came, with just playing at that age. You know, nowadays I think it would be pretty hard pressed to find that, because there's so much skill availability. You can train so much more regularly now, and that just wasn't the case in the 90s, but his skill came in a different way.
Coach, we've all heard about his basketball exploits at the high school level. So you talk about when you first saw him, where his skill level was. By the time he left the program, what type of advancements had he made in his game? And was he a legitimate, you know, college caliber basketball player?
Yeah, he was very under the radar. His sophomore, junior year, he only averaged about 15 a game. But he was a stat filler. He just kind of did what needed to be done. If he needed to drop 20, he dropped 20. But he was in terms of just a loaded the stats every game. He would have his six assists because of his great hands. He would have or his great eyes, his five or six steals with his great hands, and then obviously he was just so consistent every game. His senior year is when he turned it up a notch. We did get moved to a bigger conference, and his play had to be increased, and he just took it to a different level. He averaged almost 25 points a game that year, with being again really good in all those other areas against better people. And then he had some people that came in late his senior year. Some of the mid majors that were interested, but at that time he had already committed to football at the end of his playing in the fall. So they knew that he was committed to Eastern at the time, but I think they're hoping that maybe he would change his mind a little bit.
You know, Coach, you kind of have a what I call an old school perspective on how multi-sport athletes used to be, because you coached on the basketball team, but you also helped out with the football squad. Now that we think about Romo, how much did football help his basketball and basketball help his football? How did he benefit from being a multi-sport athlete?
Yeah, I think when we talk about multi-sport a lot in high school, as a high school coaches, we talk about that a lot. But there's a little bit of difference between being a multi-sport, because you have to, a lot of these sports, they're so skill-based now. And I don't care if it's track, you still have, running technique and explosion, and you're talking about power. And you go that to a ball sport, you're still having to work on those skill-driven activities. That's where I think he took it to a different level as he progressed into college and beyond, is he took those skills and then he mastered the skills. And those were conversations that I had with him is if you want to be good, you got to get better. So he improved his jump shot. He improved his three-point percentage. He became a better shooter, where before he was just a scorer. And he improved on that from his junior to senior year. And then if you see, obviously it's pretty well documented, his progress that he made in the football aspect of it, based on his decision that, okay, I want to learn how to throw the football the best I can.
Coach, we're trying to, really put together what the meaning is with so many of these professional quarterbacks having background on the basketball court. And we've heard different theories. You talk about the vision, the competitiveness, the athleticism. What is it? If you're going to try and define that one thing, having coached in both those arenas and seen somebody do it at a high level, what is that carryover that we see from the quarterbacks that have the basketball background?
Well, I think, I'm not an NFL guy, obviously, or an NBA guy, but there's that it factor too, that you just have something that others don't. I think not any of us can just walk in and if we work hard enough, hit a 98 mile per hour fastball and be able to keep our hands back on a slider. It just, you have a gift, and there's some gifts that they've been given. It's, do they take those gifts then and take them to a different level? And I guess that's what I find intriguing about Tony, is he kind of decides that he wants to be good at something and then he goes after it. And that happened with the football aspect. And now being able to spend some time with him and, some of the golf talk, he's doing the identical approach in golf is, I'm just going to master every part of that craft to see where I can get it. In football, obviously, you end up having him the ability to be an all-pro quarterback. And I think golf is kind of sitting there waiting to see where that ceiling could be.
You know, Coach, because of your new unique perspective coaching Tony and having seen it, like where a guy is able to develop in both sports, something that you said kind of stuck out to me, and we kind of like to educate our listeners. You talked about sports now are more skill based than they were in the 90s, where people are spending more time training on individual skills. And so it's harder for multi-sport guys to kind of develop and catch up. So if you have a kid who wants to be a multi-sport kid, how can you best help them be really good in both sports when you're saying everything is so skill based and you only have a limited amount of time?
Yeah, ironically, I have those conversations in my own household. You talk about, with my kids and the kids that I coach, if you're not blessed with that athletic ability or that ability just to step on the floor and just be better than everybody, and there's some people like that they don't have to necessarily work at it, but the bar has been raised so much with how good our athletes are, and that they're better at a young age. And you can blame that on that there is some specialization, and that specialization, you know, might have caused that bar to maybe go a little bit higher. But that's kind of what we talk about as high school level coaches, is that you still can be good at multiple things. You might have to work a little bit harder. There might have to be a little bit more, you know, put into, you know, those particular skill development sports, but you still can do it. I find it hard that if you weren't blessed with great athletic ability, I do think it's hard to be a 3 and a 4 sport athlete. I just have to be quite honest. But those kids that have a desire and a will, and then they can have good time management skills, and they have parents that can help them out with that, I think they learn that they can be pretty special in multiple ways.
Coach, last question from me, and I do appreciate your time today, but one of the other things a lot of these great players that we get a chance to scout each and every year as they come into the draft, they have in common is they face some sort of adversity, whether it's in their personal life, whether it's in their playing career, but they've had adversity set in front of them, and they've been able to overcome it. Is there any story or any reference there on Tony on some of the adversity he might have had in his playing career?
Well, I think his adversity started just as kind of a no-name recruit. You know, only going on partial scholarship, maybe, you know, it started there just, you know, and I think that spring was a springboard for him to say, you know what, okay, nothing's going to be given to me. You know, and if you go in again, you go back and look at, you know, the conversations that took place, that they weren't even sure at the college level that he could be a college quarterback. So part of the adversity, I think, with people is just deciding that I want to be good at this. I want to excel at this. And if you translate that to high school and college, that we have conversations with our athletes, that's really what those conversations are, is what do you want to be good at? And if you have a passion for that and there's an interest at being better, and then you have some sort of, you know, some sort of an internal push, you know, that intrinsic motivation can take kids a long way. But if you don't have that intrinsic motivation and, you know, you find kids that are just doing it for the wrong ways, I just think that they just hit a wall. And Tony was just that person that he was never going to, you know, hit the wall. He was just going to prove it to himself that until I'm told I can't do this, I'm just going to go for it. And I just, the guy kind of amazes me. He does it in everything that he is involved in, everything that he's participated in. He, you know, and obviously he's got some opportunities now in some of the golf world that some of us might not have. But it's that decision making that I am going to be great at this. And I think that just overcame any adversity that would have been in his way.
Well, that is awesome. I can't thank you enough for taking some time for us today. I said last question, but I do have one more. What period are we in?
Oh, keep it coming. I love this.
How much school day we got left here?
I got plenty. I got plenty of time
today.
My kids are with somebody else. This is great.
I love it. I love it. Do you teach anything there at the school?
I'm actually a school counselor. So I was a math teacher for the longest time. And as a counselor, I, you know, it fulfills my day. I just met with, 120 kids about decision making and making goals. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of, quite honestly, it's kind of a coaching every single aspect of my day. It's just coaching in a different way.
I love it. It's great.
That's awesome. I love it. Get a chance to be a mentor to those kids. That's big time.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Hey, we do appreciate it, man. I know you got a lot going on there. It's been a great to catch up. We're doing an episode where we're kind of tying in just the basketball world with the football world as the NBA season launches. So we had Tom Crean on, you know, obviously with his connections in the football world with the Harbaughs being in that family, and he was great. And then we were trying to find somebody that could really tap into some of these football players that were great basketball players, and you were perfect. So we appreciate your time.
Yeah, you know, one comment that they did a little piece on Wisconsin football. And we have a lot of our athletes in Wisconsin because the weather kind of dictates that, you know, you kind of shut down in the winter. Wisconsin football has obviously a tremendous amount of guys that play basketball in the state of Wisconsin. And Joe Thomas kind of started that from a lineman, and he was, you know, a true multi-sport guy as well, that just excelled in all areas. So they did a nice piece on that. So I'm glad that it's coming. It's something that we, like I said, talk about with our athletes quite a bit, that you can be successful at multiple things. And I appreciate you guys letting me talk about it.
No, that was great. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you.
Buck, I thought the interesting thing during that conversation was just learning how the growth for Tony Romo, how it took place, to what he was as a young basketball player and how he improved his game and what he emerged as later on in his career. I think that's a lesson you can take, you know, for a young player's development when you're scouting players for the NFL and you can see a track record of improvement. That's often a good sign.
Yeah, I think that is often a good sign. And I think the big thing when it comes to Tony Romo really kind of just digging into the details of whatever it is he was pursuing. He talked about, obviously, in basketball, how he kind of leaned on his athleticism, worked on improving his shot, and eventually became a deadly scorer for the team. But he also mentioned how Tony Romo has approached this golf endeavor and how he just kind of digs into the details, puts a lot of time in. And I think the common denominator that we've seen between both of these interviews, they talk about players who develop and players who become great put a lot of time in. And I think that is the thing that I'm looking for when I'm looking at a player as a scout. I'm looking to see, does he have the work ethic to kind of push himself to be even better than he thinks he can become? The work ethic is essential to being a great player.
No, I think that carries over in any sport, and it's great to catch up with him. Appreciate his time. All right, we had a chance recently to catch up with Mel Tucker, and we've asked this to every college coach we've had on the show. Now, Mel Tucker is head coach at the University of Colorado, but spent a lot of time in the state of Ohio, really was a part of that early Ohio State championship team there with Coach Tressel, recruiting a lot of those players, and knows the recruiting game as well as anybody. Been at Alabama, been at Georgia, now finds himself as head coach at Colorado. So we asked him, who's the best high school football player you've ever seen? And he offered a quite an interesting answer.
I actually saw LeBron at St. V.
Play football
before he stopped playing football. This was like sophomore tape. He was annihilating people out there. But
What did he look like on a football field?
I mean, he looked like a giant. You know, a man amongst boys that, you know, he would terrorize.
He was a wide receiver, right?
Yeah, I saw him actually playing some defense, too. I remember him playing some safety. So, I mean, this.
Well, hold up. He wasn't on the last. He was playing safety?
I saw him out there running around. I mean, and that was interesting to see, because we all knew who he was. And it was like, you know, is this guy actually, how long is this guy even going to play? You know, so we didn't even really watch the whole tape.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Buck, this kind of got my wheels kind of churning here when we started hearing those stories about LeBron James and what he was like from Coach Mel Tucker. And it got us thinking a little bit. We need to dig a little deeper here. We got to go talk to somebody else as well. And that's exactly what we ended up doing. I just wish I would love to have played with LeBron James, because my accuracy could be a little spotty, and I think he'd help me out a little bit there.
I mean, I think anytime you get an opportunity at a big body playmaker who can make those 50-50 catches look routine, you definitely like to have those guys. But, the fact that LeBron James was a two-time All-State wide receiver as a sophomore and junior only gives you like a little peek, a glimpse at what they were working with when he was in high school.
Well, Coach Tucker got us thinking, so thanks to our booking staff there, led by David Singer, we reached out. We had to do a little homework, and we reached out, and we found him. We found Jim Meyer, who was LeBron James' head football coach at St. Vincent St. Mary for his freshman and sophomore season. So we wanted to learn a little bit more about LeBron James, a football player. We know about him as the all-world basketball player, the king, but we wanted to learn more about what he was like on the grass. So here's our conversation with LeBron James' high school football coach, Jim Meyer. Well, Coach, we appreciate you taking some time for us today. I guess my first question would be, you know, about LeBron James. When was the first time you'd heard of him or heard about this kid that was kind of coming up through the system you might get a chance to coach?
Well, when we hired Keith Dambrot, LeBron was in eighth grade at the time. Keith had mentioned something about having a special kid. Of course, you know, a lot of coaches say that about players. And then we kept that in mind as he came on campus in ninth grade. Luckily for us, Coach Dambra allowed him to play football as a freshman, along with his buddies, Shion and Willie and others. Once we saw him on the field, now he was not as big as he is now. I think maybe 6'4", but the talent was there. I mean, he started off as a ninth grader practicing and learning the game, because I don't think he played organized football before that time. So he was kind of getting used to the game and quickly on it. And then as he got to play ninth grade ball, that only took a couple games. Then he was playing JV ball. That just took a couple of games. And then we finally figured it out that we had somebody special.
You know, and thinking
football wise.
It's so funny. And thinking about the special nature and the special abilities, I mean, he made All-State at wide receiver back-to-back years as a sophomore and junior. And I'm looking at these stats as a sophomore, 42 catches, 752 yards, 11 touchdowns. As a senior, 57, 1,160 yards and 16 touchdowns. Coach, LeBron James had to be a really, really good football player. What made him so special on the gridiron?
When you look out there, and I told our quarterbacks, and my offense at the time was pretty wide open compared to what it is then. Now it wouldn't be. And I said, well, you got a 6'6" guy out there being covered by a 5'8" guy. Throw it to him. So we would throw it to him. And but other than just the amount of catches that he had, some of the receptions he had were phenomenal. One time this kid, a defensive back, is in the end zone, thought he had a pick. LeBron came up behind, jumped. Yeah, and got the ball and looked down on him. And it was a touchdown.
Unbelievable.
And those kind of catches, you can't coach. And it was fun to watch him develop as a wide receiver. Now, we tried him at DB, and we didn't want him to do that because I think that would have been a situation where he might have got hurt. Again, picking up wide receivers is a lot easier than trying to figure out coverages, yeah, things like that. He just got open and threw the ball to LeBron.
Coach, I'd love to know what the communication was between you and the basketball coaches as they're, you know, I guess I would use the word allowing this to happen for a young LeBron James. I would love to know what those conversations were like during the process, and when was the decision made, okay, we think we're good with him with football. Let's get him back to basketball and keep him there.
Again, I'll give Keith Dambrot the credit. I really felt that his intention for those guys to play football was to get that football mentality. More of a teamwork effort. And I'm not saying there's not a teamwork effort in basketball. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a different type. You're there in the dirt. You're there in the grind. You're there with the helmet, shoulder pads. You're there in the crowd on a Friday night. He really believed that. I think that would carry over to his basketball program. And that's why he let it happen.
You know, Coach, we're at a time where so many kids are specializing. They're opting for one sport. It sounds like you're a believer in multi-sports, being able to participate in multiple sports. What are some of the advantages that kids can gain from playing in more than just one sport?
My opinion is that kids aren't fully developed in high school. Getting to move around and moving their bodies and getting some kind of muscular exercise in different sports venues is advantageous to any kid who's playing any sport. And once you do specialize, if you're a football, basketball, track, baseball, whatever sport you choose to specialize in, those other activities through memorization, muscle memorizing, the ability to compete when, if you're a basketball guy, you got to make that final shot, pressure, those all carry over in athletics. And I really do think that's missing today. And I think parents have something to do with that. I think the coaches have something to do with that, that they think they're missing out if a kid is playing multi-sports. I really do.
Coach, the word I want to touch on, you hit there, was the competitiveness. And to me, I think it's fascinating. Just when we were growing up, you went from, it was, okay, today it's football season. As soon as that ends, we go right into basketball. Right as basketball ends, you go into baseball or track or whatever else you're going to do. But it felt like on the calendar, you're competing against an opponent on a year-round basis. Now it seems like a lot of these kids have their season and then it's a training season. And it almost feels like maybe some of that competitiveness can kind of get lost in there.
I agree. The thing is, you can't imitate being in a pressure situation anywhere. I ran track, I did a high jump, high hurdle, and I'm going against somebody. I'm running, I'm competing. You can't, there's no comparison. There's nothing you can train for that. You have to do it. As you get specialized in a sport, and I realize that, you know, kids lose time in the weight room when they jump from basketball, football, basketball, wrestling, and even in baseball. But I think what they get out of that sport, especially the coaches demanding of fitness, demanding of discipline, it makes up for it. Because once they get to college and they figure out what they want to do, they'll specialize and they'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, without a doubt, specialization can certainly help them in their later stages. I want to go back to LeBron and playing wide receiver, and I want you to kind of use your experience as a college coach. If LeBron James has stuck with football, what would LeBron James' ceiling have been?
NFL. No question. NFL. His ability to jump. And another thing that's surprised about LeBron, he picked up on things very fast. So in the right situation with the right coach in the collegiate level, he probably wouldn't have made it for 4 years. He'd have been drafted maybe by the time he's a sophomore, junior. That's how good he was.
Coach,
Randy Moss. Randy Moss is what I say. Wow. What would you compare a guy to? Mm. Randy Moss.
Wow. Wow. That is strong. I want to go real quick to the hardwood. You get a chance to coach him on the football field, but I would love to know, just give us a little taste of what the environment was like in that gym there when he was in high school and he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated and he's must-see TV as a high schooler. What was that environment like where we could say the king was kind of crowned at that point in time?
Well, I was gone after his sophomore year. So I had 2 years with him. As the athletic director, we had a change. The spectatorship that he would promote was phenomenal. We had to move a game. Keith Dambart and I were talking about moving a Central Howard game from our venue to the University of Akron's gym. And we had somebody from the media, Tim Rogers from the Plain Dealer, three-way call. I go, hey, I can do this, but Keith, you want to give up a home game because it's a neutral site. And he agreed. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought it would be the best thing for both programs, although Central Howard's AD wanted more money, which
of course
we did it. I mean, I had to pay him. Both, as a rule, both teams have to agree. We sold out in 2 hours, 6,000 seats in 2 hours. Yeah, it was it was just like that. And, you know, of course, the same thing happens when a venue like that opens up. You got people calling you, hey, any tickets? Can you help me out here? So get in line with everybody else. Great
excitement. Amazing. That is.
Let me tell you a story. Championship game.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Schottenstein Arena, freshman year. And they're playing a really good team. And they're a little bit behind going into the half, maybe with about less than a minute. And I'm in a loge because I'm an AD and I'm watching it. There's an usher there with us. And I go, this kid's pretty special. He goes, yeah, sure. You know, he's like, yeah, sure. I said, he is. Just watch. Just as the game goes on, he throws the ball under the basket. It gets picked off, right? LeBron's about at the foul line. And their All-State guard is at the half-court line. So he throws the ball downfield. He thinks he's got a bunny laying, right? LeBron wheels around, mm-hmm. catches up with him. The guy lays it up. He slams the ball into the backboard. It goes backwards. He hawks it down, does a 360 kind of dunk, and the other team lost it. After that, it was over. It was over. I mean, it was just, the usher goes, I ain't never seen anything like that. I go, yeah.
That's unbelievable. Such a great story.
That is phenomenal.
A lot of fun.
Coach, look, that is so cool, man. We feel like we learned a little bit about LeBron James, the football player. We've all seen plenty of LeBron James, the basketball player, but now we're left with memories or thoughts of, I guess I should say, what could have been a little mm-hmm. Randy Moss, and maybe even a taller, thicker, stronger Randy Moss. That's quite an image.
Yeah, I would say. Just his ability to work ethic was good, too.
Coach, we appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time today, and I wish you the best of luck going in the future. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you. Great honor. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Well, Buck, the comparison to Randy Moss, I mean, LeBron, think about how big and muscular he is now. What is he, about 260? I mean, now he's, I think, a little bit thicker than Randy Moss, but the athleticism, I mean, golly, you can see it on the basketball court. I mean, that's a fair comparison.
Very fair. I mean, you talk about a big guy that can take it off the rim. He's physical, can run around and make plays. Obviously, he was able to do it as a sophomore and a junior to earn All-State accolades. Only speaks to just what was just kind of there waiting to be unearthed on the football field. It's unfortunate we didn't get a chance to see that, but you can already tell in Meyer's response to some of our questions, he knew that he had a special one when LeBron James showed up. It's unfortunate that the football world didn't get a chance to really see it all.
Yeah, well, we're going to send out a video, too, so you'll see some of those highlights. If you want to see what LeBron James looked like as a football player, look at Bucky Brooks, at Move the Sticks. We'll tweet out some of these videos. You'll be able to see what he looked like. It's some freaky stuff.
Unbelievable.
Trust me. You'll get a kick out of that. Oh, it's ridiculous. All right, one more here. We had a chance to visit with Matt Rhule recently, the head football coach there at Baylor that's got the Baylor Bears back on track. Really an unbelievable rebound job there. No pun intended with the rebound basketball talk. We had a chance to ask him about this whole multi-sport athlete thing and comparing it with guys that are now just focused on one sport year-round. And he spoke to the benefits of having guys that have competed in multiple sports.
But we're training players from the fundamentals on up. And so we work tackling in the off season. I mean, half of tackling is before contact even occurs. It's the angles that you run. It's your eye level. It's your body position. It's do you take one more step? Do you step and strike with the same foot and same shoulder? And so we practice that a lot, you know, more than anything else, those angles and running and mirroring people. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with kids not playing a lot of different sports. You know, when you play a lot of different sports, you play basketball, you have tremendous lateral movement. When you play baseball, you have great tracking. You know, like I love finding receivers that were former outfielders and their ability to go find the ball and track it. So when you kind of specialize, you have a lot of really fast, explosive kids that can go straight ahead and you end up having a lot of torn ACLs and knee injuries and stuff because people aren't trained to go laterally. So we try to build that into our off-season program.
Buck, I think there's so many carryovers for guys that are playing different sports and how it prepares them to be football players. And I really do hope, I hope that coaches, I know we get a lot of coaches that listen to this podcast, I hope they will encourage these kids to play multiple sports. I think it is what's best for their long-term development. And I hate it. I had a coach when I was young. I played baseball all growing up, and then I was going into my freshman year. We finished football season, finished basketball season. I'm ready to go play baseball, and I had a coach sat down with me and said, look, if you play three, you'll excel in none. You need to just focus, whittle it down to two, and decide what you want to do there. And so I stopped playing baseball, and I ended up coming in my junior year, Buck. I was like, man, I miss playing baseball. I kind of enjoyed baseball. So I ended up playing my junior and senior year.
Crucial
development that was lost, you know, not playing as a freshman and a sophomore. And I miss those days where these kids all played three sports.
Yeah, I miss them. I think the problem stems on two different levels. One is the players who are increasingly specializing because that's what they hear, that's what they read. And two, the administrators that are telling these guys that, if you don't play fall basketball, you won't be able to really play in the winter. So you need to kind of go double duty. And then these guys feel this guilt, oh, I can't make it to baseball practice because I got football practice or vice versa. But I just think it's so beneficial to be able to play other sports, to be able to look at someone who has shined in another sport, another area. It just adds to the info that you're trying to have when it comes to building an ideal team and an ideal draft profile. So for me, I think there's so many benefits to playing a variety of different sports and being coached by other players, coached by other coaches, that I just can't see the downside. I can't see the negative effect unless you're just kind of getting beat to a pulp. But I just think more guys should try and play as many sports as they can for as long as they can. Because, man, when you get old like us, you don't have an opportunity to do that stuff.
I know, man. And look, it's fun. It's just fun because you don't get sick of a sport because you finish it up and you're kind of, okay, I'm kind of worn down a little bit. Boom, another sport comes in. It's just a lot of fun. So I would encourage that. If we got any kids out there listening to this thing too, I'd encourage you to play multiple sports. All right, this is an interesting question because I took a long time trying to think of what my answer would be here, Buck. The best multi-sport athlete you've ever seen. We got to say in person, right? We can't go off TV. That guy you've been around or you've seen. I know you've got several that you've been around there.
It's so crazy. So in North Carolina, like obviously you have Julius Peppers who came through, who was a big time basketball player, played on the Final Four team. You like to think him, Ronald Curry played basketball and football, might have been parade All-American player of the year or whatever in both sports. But what's crazy in terms of the best guy that I've ever seen would be Allen Iverson. And part of the thing with Allen Iverson, nice. You're talking about a guy that was a quarterback, kick returner, safety, slippery as all get out, as you can imagine, his crossover. But just being in the open field and the way that he played and the way that he returned kicks and just how dangerous he was, it's unfortunate that we didn't get an opportunity to fully see it play because after all the stuff that he did and the time that he had to serve for his mistakes, he didn't get opportunity to go back and play football. I would love to see what he would have been able to do as a football player and basketball player for one university.
Yeah. No, look, the video out there, his football video is ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
I'll go with two that I was around growing up in San Diego. The first one is a guy that I played basketball with and played against in football, and that's Daryl Russell. And I don't know how many people
D-Russ.
Remember D-Russ, but Daryl Russell, would you play with him in Oakland?
Yeah, I played with him. Great, great player, great athlete. Yeah.
Oh, Buck, I think he was the number one defensive lineman in the country coming out of high school. Mm-hmm. He went to USC, ended up being, the third overall pick to the Oakland Raiders. But I played basketball with him we called a slam and jam team that we played up in L.A., and played against him in basketball for a couple years, too. He was in our league. So this guy's 6'5", 300 pounds in high school, can dunk a basketball any way you want to dunk a basketball. Was phenomenal, phenomenal hooper. And so we would go play in these Slam and Jam tournaments, and he was high school teammates with a guy named Jelani McCoy,
ooh,
who played
yeah.
center at UCLA.
Yes.
So they were teammates, and then they were also on this Slam and Jam team, so we would go to these tournaments, and there was, I'm talking about everybody there to see Jelani, but then they would all see D-Russ, and we're like, these Kansas, all these schools wanted D-Russ to come play basketball. He was that good. He was phenomenal at that size. In football, as a defensive lineman, he was unblockable. He played tight end. He caught a pass against us one year in a flat little 5-yard pass. It literally just ran away from our whole team, a guy that big. So he was phenomenal. But the number one that I've ever seen, and unfortunately because of some back issues, I don't think you got to see what he could ultimately be, was a guy who went to my high school named Tony Clark. And Tony Clark is now the head of the MLB Players Association. Played 15 years Major League Baseball. I think he was a second pick in the draft for the Detroit Lions behind Chipper Jones. So Chipper Jones, I think, was the first pick. Tony was a second pick. I mean, he had a great baseball career. Played 15 years. Hit over 250 home runs. A long career. 6'8". About 230 coming out of high school, and his younger brother and I were really good friends, so I was over there at her house all the time. Tony Clark, as a senior, was a McDonald's All-American basketball player, signed with the University of Arizona. This is when Arizona is rolling with Elliott and all those guys. Phenomenal. 43 points a game, took him to the state championship, and it was literally a one-man show. But he would have been, in my opinion, without question, would have been a lottery pick in the NBA. But he hurt his back, I believe, his freshman year at Arizona. Ended up transferring then to San Diego State. Just played maybe one more year of basketball, and then he just did the baseball thing full time, and obviously had a long, successful career. But somebody that was that long, that athletic, that explosive, he was unique, man. I remember Chris Fowler coming to our campus with, remember Scholastic Sports America?
Yeah, how about that?
Oh yeah, he came out there. They did a big thing on Tony, with the dual sport thing. But he was incredible. The other story I'll tell you about him real quick. I would his dad would video the games, right? So you got the old school cameras. You have to park them on your shoulder. Well, his younger brother Greg would have to do a couple quarters of footage, and then so I would go with him to games. And so they would say, all right, Daniel, you need to film the fourth quarter of the basketball game, whatever. I'm like, okay. So I don't know how to use a camera. Like, we don't even have one of these things. So I've got my eye jammed up to that eye hole, right? And I'm videoing him. Well, it fogs up. It fogs up in there. You got to keep your eye away from that. I didn't know that. So literally, it's in the middle of this game, and I got to pull the thing down and get it all cleaned off so I can see. As soon as I pull it down, Buck, it's the funkiest, nastiest dunk you've ever seen in your life. So I'm supposed to spend the night at their house. So I go, I'm like, I missed the dunk. Like, I didn't even get it. I didn't even get it on footage. And that's all they're talking about on the ride home. Oh, I can't wait to see this. I'm supposed to spend the night. I said, I don't feel good. I need to call my mom. She'll come pick me up so I can go home. I'm like in, seventh grade or something like that? Sixth, seventh grade? And I'm like, yeah, I don't feel good. I need to go home. And I'm like, man, I got to get out of here before they realize I totally missed that dunk on video. It was bad.
That's hilarious. That's funny. That's real funny. That's funny. I played with some guys that were really good. Tony Gonzalez, I played with in Kansas City. We used to always go shoot hoops.
Oh yeah,
over in the park. He could play. Dale Carter, Andre Rison was an excellent basketball player. Yeah. I just kind of think that like guys who end up being like really good players in a lot of different sports are pretty good in everything because the athleticism and the yeah. like.
Yeah, it carries over. It carries over, no doubt. Well, look, the greatest athlete of all time, but I should say greatest basketball player of all time, Michael Jordan. I mean, look, to not have picked up a bat and then to go out there and at least be competitive as a mm-hmm. baseball player yeah. says something. I think Tim Tebow, you know, as an amateur, obviously one of the greatest, you know, college quarterbacks yes. of all time, didn't translate to the NFL, but then, you know, he's been at least had some rocky, you know, up and down road, I guess, there on the minor leagues. But look,
but he's there.
You got to be an athlete to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyways, that was a fun episode. I do want to thank the folks over there at ESPN LA 710 for the Lakers radio call there for giving us the ability to use that. I feel like, again, just a fascinating subject that we've talked about for a long time on this podcast, and want to thank David Singer and the booking department for being able to pull all these incredible guests together for us to launch this episode. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you enjoy the start of the basketball season, and I hope you enjoy as the football season. We're getting into the nitty-gritty here of the schedule, both at the college level and the NFL level. It's a great time of year. Absolutely love it. I appreciate you guys listening, downloading the podcast. If you have a question for us, drop it on Apple Podcasts in the rating review section there, and we'll do our best to answer it on a podcast coming soon. So appreciate you guys. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.